Chapter 7. To serve for less than service proves it worth conditioned by no hampering penalty. For these and late spoke reasons, then, I say, let not the act deface the statute book, but blot it out forthwith. Hear, hear. Fox, rising amid cheers, at this late hour, after the riddling fire the act has drawn on, my words shall hold the house the briefest while. Too obvious to the most unwilling mind it grows, that the existence of this law experience and reflection of condemned, professing to do much, it makes for nothing, not only so, while feeble in effect it shows it vicious in its principle. Engaging to raise men for the common weal it sets a harmful and unequal tax capriciously on our communities. The annals of a century fail to show more flagrant cases of oppressiveness than those this statute works to perpetrate, which, like all bills this favored statesman frames, enclose with tapestries of rhetoric disguising their real web of commonplace, though held as shaped for English bulwarking, breathes in its heart perversities of party and instincts toward oligarchic power, galling the many to relieve the few. Cheers. Whatever breadth and sense of equity inform the methods of this minister, those mitigants nearly always trace their root to measures that his predecessors wrought. And ere his government can dare assert superior claim to England's confidence, they owe it to their honor and good name to furnish better proof of such a claim than is revealed by the abortiveness of this thing, called an act for our defense. To the great gifts of its artificer no member of this house is more disposed to yield full recognition than am I. No man has found more reason so, to do through the long roll of disputatious years wherein we have stood opposed. But if one single fact could counsel me to entertain a doubt of those great gifts, and cancel faith in his capacity, that fact would be the vast imprudence shown, in staking recklessly repute like his on such an act as he has offered us, so false in principle, so poor in fruit. Sir, the achievements and effects thereof have furnished not one fragile argument which all the partiality of friendship can kindle to consider as the mark of a clear, vigorous, freedom-fostering mind.
He sits down amid lengthy cheering from the opposition.
Sheridan, my summary shall be brief, and to the point. The said Right Honorable Prime Minister has thought it proper to declare my speech the jesting of an irresponsible. Words from a person who has never read the act he claims emergent to repeal. Such quips and kissings,
as he reckons them,
he implicates as gathered from long hoards stored up with cruel care, to be discharged with sudden blaze of pyrotechnic art on the devoted, gentle, shrinking head of the right incomparable gentleman.
Laughter.
But were my humble solemn sad oration
laughter.
Indeed such rattle as he rated it, is it not strange, and passing precedent, that the illustrious chief of government should have uprisen with such indecent speed and strenuously replied? He, sir, knows well that vast and luminous talents like his own could not have been demanded to choke off a witcraft marked by nothing more of weight than ignorant irregularity. Nec dus intersit, and so is a well-worn citation whose close fit none will perceive more clearly in the fane than its presiding deity opposite.
Laughter.
His thunderous answer thus perforce condemns him. Moreover, to top all, the while replying, he still thought best to leave intact the reasons on which my blame was founded. Thus, then, stands my motion unimpaired, convicting clearly of dire perversion that capacity we formerly admired.
Cries of H.O.
This minister whose circumventions never circumvent, whose coalitions fail to coalesce, this dab but secret treaties known to all, this darling of the aristocracy,
laughter, oh, cheers, and cries of Ivide,
has brought the millions to the verge of ruin, by pledging them to continental quarrels, of which we see no end.
Cheers. The members rise to divide.
Spirit of the pities, it irks me, that they thus should yea and nay, as though a power lay in their oraclings, if each decision work unconsciously, and would be operant, though unloosened were a single lip. Spirit of rumor, there may react on things some influence from these, indefinitely, and even on that, whose outcome we all are. Spirit of the years, hypotheses. More boots it to remind the younger here of our ethereal band and hierarchy of intelligences, that this thwart parliament whose moods we watch so insular, empiric, unideal may figure forth in sharp and salient lines to retrospective eyes of after days, and print its legend large on history. For one cause, if I read the signs aright, the night's appearance of its minister in the assembly of his long time sway is near his last, and themes tonight launched forth will take a tincture from that memory, when we recall the scene and circumstance that hung about his pleadings. But no more, the ritual of each party is rehearsed, dislodging not one voter prejudice. The ministers their ministries retain, and ins as ins, and outs as outs, remain. Spirit of the pities, meanwhile, what of the foeman's vast array that wakes these tones? Spirit of the years, abide the event, young shade. Soon stars will shut, and show a spring-eyed dawn, and sunbeams fountain forth, that will arouse those forming bands to full activity.
An honorable member reports that he spies strangers.
A timely token that we dally here. We now cast off these mortal manacles, and speed us seaward.
The phantoms vanish from the gallery. The members file out to the lobbies. The House and Westminster recede into the films of night, and the point of observation shifts rapidly across the channel.
Scene IV, the harbor of Bowlen,
the morning breaks, radiant with early sunlight. The French army of invasion is disclosed. On the hills on either side of the town, and behind appear large military camps formed of timber huts. Lower down are other camps of more or less permanent kind, the whole affording accommodation for 150,000 men. South of the town is an extensive basin surrounded by quays, the heaps of fresh soil around showing it to be a recent excavation from the banks of the Lion. The basin is crowded with a flotilla, consisting of hundreds of vessels of sundry kinds. Flat-bottomed brigs with guns and two masts, boats of one mast, carrying each an artillery wagon, two guns, and a two-stalled horse box, transports with three low masts, and long narrow pinnaces arranged for many oars. Timber, sawmills, and new-cut planks spread in profusion around, and many of the town residences are seen to be adapted for warehouses and infirmaries.
Dumb show, moving in this scene are countless companies of soldiery, engaged in a drill practice of embarking and disembarking, and of hoisting horses into the vessels and landing them again. Vehicles bearing provisions of many sorts load, and unload before the temporary warehouses. Further off, on the open land, bodies of troops are at field drill. Other bodies of soldiers, half stripped and encrusted with mud, are laboring as navvies in repairing the excavations. An English squadron of about 20 sail, comprising a ship or two of the line, frigates, brigs, and luggers, confronts the busy spectacle from the sea. The show presently dims and becomes broken, till only its flashes and gleams are visible. Anon a curtain of cloud closes over it. Scene V, London. The house of a lady of quality,
a fashionable crowd is present at an evening party, which includes the Dukes of Beaufort and Rutland, Lords Malmesbury, Harrowby, Eldon, Grenville, Castlereagh, Sidmouth, and Mulgrave, with their ladies, also Canning, Percival, Townshend, Lady Anne Hamilton, Mrs. Damer, Lady Caroline Lamb, and many other notables.
A gentleman offering his snuff box, so then, the treaty anxiously concerted between ourselves and Frosty Muscovy is duly signed? A cabinet minister was signed a few days back, and is in force. And we do firmly hope the loud pretensions, and the stunning dins now daily heard, these laudable exertions may keep in curb, that ere our greening land darken its leaves beneath the dog-day suns, the independence of the continent may be assured, and all the rumpled flags of famous dynasties so foully mauled, extend their honored hues as heretofore. Gentlemen, so be it. Yet this man is a volcano, and proven tis, by God, volcanoes choked have ere now turned to earthquakes. Lady, what the news? The checkerboard of diplomatic moves is London, all the world knows. Here are born all inspirations of the continent, so tell. Gentlemen, inspirations now abound. Lady, nay, but your looks are grave. That measured speech better can matter, that will waken us. Is it some piquant cruelty of his? Or other tickling horror from abroad the packet is brought in? Gentlemen, the treaty signed. Minister, whereby the parties mutually agreed in it in union and in general league all outraged Europe. Lady, Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.